This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important.
Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance Network, and today is episode 113 of the Conscious Resistance Live on October 16th, 2020. Hope you guys are having a good Friday wherever you're at. I am live in Morelia, Michoacan, Mexico, where I've been for the last couple months, where I'm living, where I'm continuing my search for land, my search for the community, the building of the Conscious Agora. Let me get this camera fixed. There we go. And today we are covering a lot today. Actually, I got a whole bunch of articles open up in front of me. We're going to be going over the reports of the FBI claiming they arrested some domestic extremists that were trying to kidnap Michigan's governor. We're going to look a little deeper into that. I've also got some information about a Vatican sex abuse trial that you might not have heard about involving pedophilia in the Catholic Church. Surprise, surprise. And then we are also going to look at some recent statements from Donald Trump about QAnon and address that crowd and address those of you who still think Donald Trump is some kind of savior. We're going to save that towards the end. So I hopefully don't offend too many people in the meantime. But before we do that, I want to remind you guys to bookmark our website, which is called theconsciousresistance.com. You want to go visit that, theconsciousresistance.com. And this is where you can find all of my books. I've written 5 coming up on 6 books, and they're all available to download for free here on the website. You can also watch our documentaries for free or purchase them if you want to. You can find podcasts like this one you're listening to right now and several others who contribute to our channel. And most importantly, you can follow us on Float. You can follow us on Minds. You can follow us on Hive. You can join my text list. If you were on the text list, you would have just got a message a couple of minutes ago saying, I'm live now, come watch, with a link. You can also find our videos on BitChute and Library. I didn't say YouTube. I didn't say Facebook. Yes, I exist on those places. But as you guys know very well, the censorship is increasing. So I'm asking you more than ever to please follow me on other platforms. I'm currently still on a ban on YouTube right now, which is why we have a lot less listeners than we usually do, because my biggest audience is on YouTube. But either way, we're going to keep putting content out. Please do consider subscribing to my Telegram channel. This is a place that I post articles I read throughout the day. Interesting things I find in addition to my own work, my own articles, my own videos, things of that sort. So please continue to do that. And a couple of other, I guess you could say, housekeeping items that I want to mention that are important for what's going on right now. This month I've been putting out content, but I've been putting out less content. I don't know if anybody notices or cares, but it's because I'm working on my documentary series, The Pyramid of Power, which if you heard me talk about it, it's a 13-part documentary series, which is going to be about 20 to 25 minutes each episode. It'll be released later on this year. I have a really big announcement that I can't tell you yet about where we're going to be premiering this documentary series. And it's going to feature so far Mark Passio, James Corbett, Ryan Christian, probably Whitney Webb, G. Edward Griffin, and many other people that I'm reaching out to. And it's going to be undebunkable, proving that there is a global agenda to control and subvert humanity. And we're going to go through piece by piece of this global agenda. The other thing, as I was just mentioning, is censorship is on the rise. So again, I'm encouraging you guys to follow me on my text list, my Telegram channel, Minds, Float, BitChute, Library, Hive, or just sign up for the newsletter on theconsciousresistance.com if you want to keep up with my work. The other thing, just a piece of information that I want to mention to you, is that I've been talking lately about dark winter, second wave, and the chaos that potentially surrounds the upcoming U.S. presidential election on November 3rd. I am in the process of organizing what we are calling Operation Underground Railroad. That's what we talked about a couple of weeks ago on this show. Operation Underground Railroad is the beginning of me encouraging and inviting people to come down here to Mexico to just get out of the U.S. for a little bit. If you are concerned with what might be coming around the elections and the various simulations and exercises from various people claiming that we were going to have civil war, potential martial law, and things of that sort, well, then I invite you to go back and watch episode 112, Operation Underground Railroad is live, or you can just email OPURR, that's O P-U-R-R at protonmail.com if you want more information about getting down here to Mexico during the election or sometime afterwards because you have concerns. That's something that I'm still doing right now. We're actively, I'll be heading back to Houston next weekend. I'll be there for 5 days. And then we have a caravan of people coming from Houston down to various parts of Mexico. Some people to stay longer, some people just for a short vacation to watch the election from a distance. And the final note is tomorrow, if for those who may be interested, tomorrow afternoon at 12 Central PM, if you want to be a part of the 6th International Freedom Cell Conference call, you can go visit freedomcells.org, go check out our events. You can find out more about that. You can also go to my social media pages and you'll see me posting about it. That's tomorrow at 12 PM Central. And this is a, you know, international network of people who are all saying, look, we're tired of politics. We're tired of protesting, even in some cases. We're looking for tangible, direct ways to start organizing our affairs and organizing our lives. And so many people have adopted and are kind of pushing towards the concept of freedom cells. And it's really beautiful to see. I did an interview yesterday with Dave from Australia, which you can find at theconsciousresistance.com, talking about how him and his community are dealing with the reality that they are faced with totalitarian measures. They have checkpoints. They have to, you know, explain why they want to go on a walk. And I mean, there's just so much of their existence now that I don't think is freedom. It's not what I don't think most of us would say we want, but still they're finding a way to organize around that. So Dave will be talking to us tomorrow from Australia as part of the 6th International Freedom Cell Conference call. And then also my buddy Johan from India, who's just been kicking so much ass during COVID and spreading information and organizing and just doing lots of good work. Both of them will be guests tomorrow on the 6th International Freedom Cell Conference call at 12 p.m. Central U.S. time. And you can find more about that on my various social media feeds. The Zoom call, okay, let me take this question. The Zoom call was originally Sunday and it was moved tomorrow to Saturday. I apologize if there's confusion. I will make sure that that's written correctly everywhere, but it's tomorrow, Saturday the 17th at 12 p.m., not on Sunday. Sunday, I have a different call going on. So let's move on then. Let's go forward and dive into there's so much that I'm going to cover. The first few things that I want to share with you guys involve COVID. And I got to do a little brief COVID update, right? At least a little bit. But honestly, I'm sick of talking about COVID. Although it's massively important, I'm really sick of talking about it. There are so many other important topics that we're going to cover today that are not getting the coverage they need because people are obsessing over COVID right now. And rightfully so. There's a lot of big things taking place related to COVID. But what I will say is that I just recently put out a new article for The Last American Vagabond. U.S. government awards contracts to 7 organizations with ties to Gates Foundation, DARPA, and Big Tech. I really, really, really recommend you read this because this is my introduction to an investigation that I'm working on with Whitney Webb and Ryan Christian of The Last American Vagabond called Exposed Warp Speed. Whitney's already wrote 2 articles, including this one right here, which again, I highly, highly recommend you read. Google and Oracle, the 2 companies, to monitor Americans who get Warp Speed's COVID-19 vaccine for up to 2 years. Are you guys hearing this correctly? If you choose to get one of the 6 vaccines, there's going to be 6 different vaccines according to the U.S. government's own documents and according to what we're seeing so far. There's going to be 6 different vaccines and they're going to track all the different people using Google and Oracle and other big tech technology and wearable technology and smartphone apps. That's what my article was about, how they're talking about using this thing right here called the vaccine. I can't remember what it's called, Verify Patch or something along those lines, but there's others. It's wearable things like Fitbit, it's patches on your skin. And the next step that they are realistically, factually working on, not a conspiracy, are injectables, various types of injectables. And that's where my next article and Whitney's next articles are going to be going. But this one right here, she really keyed in on how Google and Oracle are playing a role in Operation Warp Speed and that they will be tracking you. If you choose to get a COVID-19 vaccine, you will be tracked for 2 years so they can study to make sure it's working and not killing anybody, I imagine. And both my article and this article can be found on The Last American Vagabond. I also do want to say, if you go to theconsciousresistance.com right now and you look up the most recent post, TCR Live 113, every link that I'm going over is already listed there. So just go over there and if you want to get caught up. And just for a visual aid, guys, this is the U.S. government's unclassified but for official use only Operation Warp Speed organizational chart. And it looks like a military chart, which let me just decipher some of it for you guys. Down here in the bottom right, there's some color coding. You see the dark green is for Army individuals. The light green is for Army civilians. And then we have purple is joint, then joint civilian. Then the yellow is Department of Defense, and then non-Department of Defense. So look at this. You see how many different people are DOD, right? And then there's lots of green, which is all Army. And then there's a few blue, which are non-DOD. And you have people from the FDA working on therapeutics, from BARDA, from the NIH. And as I show here in my article, the NIH just awarded contracts with these eight different companies who are working on patches, who are working on wearable technology. This is coming to fruition, guys. It's all happening right now in front of our eyes, and most people don't even see it happening. And this operational chart here, as you can see, there are only 14 civilians. The vast majority of people involved, 27 people, are in the U.S. military. This is a military operation. This is Operation Warp Speed is a military operation. It's not just that the military are going to be coming along to help distribute. The whole thing is being ran by military, by big tech, and by big pharma. The chief advisor right here is Dr. Moncef Slaoui, and I've written previous articles about him. He is the person that Trump put at the head of Operation Warp Speed, and he worked for Moderna, who's one of the leading vaccine companies. He also owns stock, and this is what my next article is going to focus on, so I don't want to give it away. He owns stock in a company called Galvani Bioelectronics. They are working on injectable subdermal technologies for tracking people for health purposes. It is a fact. It is a fact, okay? There's no denying this. This is just the reality. And if you want to see this chart, it is in this article that I put together, U.S. Government Awards Contracts to 7 Organizations. Go check that out at The Last American Vagabond and study this chart. Get to know the people. And I mean, I know a lot of you don't have the time, and that's why myself and Whitney Webb and Ryan are doing this work. I hope that you use it and share it with friends and family, because it's only by educating people about what's coming. Like I said, the potential for a dark winter, the second wave, and you know, election chaos, all of this is sort of converging right now into one big thing. And Donald Trump is still promising they're going to have some vaccine by the end of this month. We'll see. But either way, early 2021, the vaccines will be coming in. As it stands right now, there are 6 different vaccines that the government is apparently planning to release out into the public and then track the individuals who get these vaccines. And one other COVID note that I wanted to mention to you guys. Well, first, I want to say, if you don't watch my other podcast, my other show, which is called Freethinker Radio, which I broadcast with my buddies Micah and Johnny, it is actually also broadcast on FM radio in Houston on 90.1. It's called Freethinker Radio. You can find all the archives for that at theconsciousresistance.com. Go back and watch that episode when you get a chance. It's only an hour long. It's got some music. It should be entertaining. But I go into deeper stories. We have studies showing that this virus, or whatever you want to call it, COVID-19, whatever it really is not spreading in daycare centers. It's not spreading at schools, but yet the kids are still being locked down. We have people from the World Health Organization saying that lockdowns are only harming the poorest people. And then here you have this story where another World Health Organization official says that masks should only be worn if you're caring for coronavirus patients. And this one is interesting because I found this on the New York Post, and some people, again, be like, oh, it's New York Post, it's trash, whatever. And if you say, look at it closer, it's actually originally published by Fox. But since I'm a critical thinker, I don't immediately just dismiss something because I don't like the source. I actually look at the information itself. And when you look at this information, what you see is that there's this woman, Dr. April Baller, a public health specialist for the World Health Organization, says in this video, if you do not have any respiratory symptoms such as a fever, cough, or runny nose, you do not need to wear a mask. Masks should only be used by healthcare workers, caretakers, or by people who are sick with symptoms of fever and cough. And she goes on to talk about asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic individuals. And that video is in this article. It pops up when you first open it. But then the interesting thing is I went, you know, because it links, it says it's on a video on the World Health Organization's website. And you go here and you can see that same woman, Dr. April Baller, right here. She's in several videos. But the one that they include in the article is apparently missing already. So I would honestly be downloading this article, if you can, from the New York Post as quickly as possible. I'm going to figure out if I can actually rip the video off their website, because it appears that even though that was a video, I saw the video myself and listened to this woman, Dr. April Baller from the World Health Organization, say that if you don't have a runny nose, if you're not coughing, if you're not caring for a healthcare patient, then you don't need to wear a mask. But apparently it's already missing. So could be some foolery going on, but I just wanted to share that with you guys related to COVID. And then the final COVID note is this. This is where it's all leading, my friends. It is a push which started in 2019. I reported on this. You can go back and find it on the website. At the beginning of 2019, January 2019, way before COVID was a thing, the World Health Organization announced that they put up this document together and said, here are the top 10 threats to global health. One of those threats was what they called vaccine hesitancy. And vaccine hesitancy is defined as obviously people who are hesitant to take vaccines. And then they go further, people who are anti-vaxxers, which is just a term like conspiracy theorist that gets thrown at anybody who questions the program. And there's just been this concerted effort since then, since the beginning of 2019, all through 2019, there was a push for the measles thing and take away people's exemptions for vaccines and all this stuff we've seen. And then COVID came and now it's ramped up to another level because I've been following the mainstreams. They're putting out this sentiment that the anti-vaxxers could screw up the COVID recovery if they convince people that their, you know, vaccines might be dangerous. And now we have this vaccine reluctance linked to belief in virus hoaxes. So this is an attempt to paint people who have legitimate questions about vaccines as people who just believe in hoaxes. We're just stupid. We don't know how to think for ourselves. We just believe anything we read on the internet. And according to this, up to a third of people in certain countries may believe coronavirus misinformation and in turn be less open to immunization, scientists said on Wednesday, warning that development of a vaccine might not be enough. Researchers in Britain and the Netherlands conducted surveys in the UK, United States, Ireland, Mexico, and Spain, and found that while most people rejected COVID-19 conspiracy theories, some of these false stories had taken root in substantial sections of the population. The World Health Organization, which again, we have to remember the number one funder after the United States is Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The World Health Organization has warned that the pandemic has been accompanied by an infodemic that has made it hard for people to cut through the misinformation. There is truth to this. I do believe that the intelligence agencies are purposefully sending out bad information to confuse the hell out of people. And if you go back to the Event 201 exercise, which took place October 18, 2019, and it simulated a coronavirus pandemic sweeping the world, they talked about what they called the flood strategy. They said where there was going to be people in this simulated exercise that people would, you know, spread conspiracy theories and misinformation. So in the Event 201 exercise, they basically said that they needed to do the flood. And the flood was, well, we're going to flood the people with credible sources. But I also think that the people, the engineers who, whether they created this thing or they're just taking advantage of it, that they are using the flood strategy to flood us with all kinds of bad theories about 5G and other things and lots of other things and in the QAnon crap that we're going to get into. And it's just to confuse people, to keep people from knowing what is truth and what is not. So I do think that we are in some sort of infodemic, but it's not because people are questioning COVID or because people are questioning vaccines. It's because we live in a time where science is completely controlled and there's so many federal agencies in the United States and elsewhere that are, they're controlled. They're bought off and they're called captured agencies. You can look up that term and find some research on that. So the study found that the conspiracies most believed by participants was the claim that the virus was deliberately engineered in the Chinese city of Wuhan. And it says the hoax that COVID symptoms are worsened by 5G was deemed reliable by 16% of people in Mexico and Spain, 12% in Ireland, and 8% in the UK and the US. Now, it says the study was published in the Journal of the Royal Society Open Science. Now, I could be wrong about this, but maybe we can just do some live research here. Let's just do a search of Royal Society Wiki real quick, because if this Royal Society is who I think they are, then this is worth just mentioning. Okay, so the Royal Society, it says that this study was published by the journal Royal Society Open Science. And Royal Society has been around for a long time, considered a learned society. And if I'm thinking of the correct Royal Society, they are also connected to some of the UK elite and the American elite. I'm pretty sure I'm thinking of the right one. So it wouldn't surprise me that this kind of study would come from their journal and would be published out there. And then you see repeated by websites like fizz.org, who went with the headline, "Popularity of COVID-19 Conspiracies and Links to Vaccine Hesitancy Revealed by International Study." And look how they just like to put the dollar with the all-seeing eye there. I'm sure there's no reason they chose to put that there. But it's these are the kind of things that I think we're leading towards. As we get closer to the vaccines and the Operation Warp Speed and all this sort of stuff, people are beginning to question and push back against COVID in different ways. And what we're seeing more and more, we're going to talk about the Michigan situation in a couple of minutes, this talk of domestic extremists. Guys, this is something that has been building for at least 10 years. In the immediate aftermath of 9/11, we saw the use of this, the kind of Middle Eastern terrorist as the boogeyman, right? That somebody from Afghanistan or Pakistan or Iran is going to come attack us. And, you know, that was the big thing, the international terrorists. But we've also seen an increase in the past few years where they start talking about the idea of domestic extremism. And this is way before Trump has been around. This is during the Obama era, where people were saying that because we had Obama, you know, the first black president, that there was a rise in white supremacy. And clearly there are racist people that exist in the United States. I'm not denying that at all. But I do believe that this whole white supremacy thing is being tied in now with domestic extremists, which would be people like me who talk about let's organize outside of the government. Let's not accept, you know, the corruption. Let's not just blindly take the vaccines. Let's, you know, use alternative currency. These are things that they consider to be extreme. And so somebody like myself would be listed as a domestic extremist. They are tying that in to vaccine skeptics, anti-vaxxers. And this is going to be a push that we see increasingly, especially when the vaccines start rolling out. They are going to go hard on propaganda with your friends, neighbors, and family members about those of us who question the vaccine. All right, let's move on to the next story. I think we covered that one deep enough. And we're going to get now into the Vatican news. First off, I do want to do a special shout out to everybody who is watching on dlive.tv/consciousresistance or everybody who's watching on float.app/consciousresistance. Thank you guys. I appreciate it. I know some of you are choosing to watch on Facebook. Let's do this right now. If you're watching on Facebook, make a comment right now and then leave Facebook and go over to dlive.tv/consciousresistance and make another comment. Use the same username. I don't know if you have to join the website. I think you might be able to just comment. We'll check this out. But if you can join real quick, I'll be patient. I'm going to look over here on the Facebook feed, say, hey, then go over to DLive or float.app and say, hey. And those of you who do that, I will ship you a shirt. I will ship you a conscious resistance shirt free of charge for 5 people. That's it. So let's see that. And the reason I'm doing that is because I really want you guys to start thinking in terms of why am I continuing to use Facebook or these platforms that don't serve our purposes. I know the people who created Float. They are anarchist, free-minded people. They are, you know, awesome, powerful people. They're not going to censor me. I know the people who created Minds. They're not going to censor people. I don't know the people who created DLive, but I do know that they don't censor people from what I see. All right, cool. We got a bunch of highs, hays, hays, hays. Cool. I see some of you guys from Facebook. Let's go ahead and if you can move over to DLive or Float, I'll check those out. But let's get into the next story now. Again, you're listening to the Conscious Resistance Live. My name is Derek Bros, and we will continue on here. This next story has to do with the Vatican. Did you know that there's a Vatican sex abuse trial going on right now? No, most people didn't know about that. I've kind of kept up with it, but I almost forgot about it. And then I saw that there was an update the other day, and I figured this is a great opportunity to talk to you guys about this. It says, Vatican trial for sex abuse in Pope's youth seminary opens. So think about this. This is not just some random person in the Catholic Church, you know, is touching boys and girls again, which unfortunately has happened quite a bit. No, this is somebody in the Pope's youth seminary, in the Pope's own circle himself. And this is a big, big thing. For the first time, a clergy sex abuse trial opened on Wednesday in the Vatican's criminal tribunal, with one priest accused of molesting an altar boy in the Vatican's youth seminary, and another priest, of course, accused of covering it up. The case concerns the closed world of the St. Pius X Youth Seminary, a palazzo inside the Vatican walls, just across the street from where Pope Francis lives. Literally, this abuse happened right across the street from where the Pope lives, and the criminal tribunal itself. The seminary, which is, and I mean, clearly the Vatican City is not very big, so it's understandable. But my point is it's happening right there. The seminary, which is run by a Como, Italy-based association of priests, serves as a residence for boys aged 12 to 18 who serve as altar boys at papal masses in St. Peter's Basilica. According to the indictment, which was read aloud on Wednesday, the Reverend Gabriel Martinelli, 28, is accused of a 28-year-old. What is accused of abusing his authority as a more senior seminarian to force a younger seminarian into, quote, carnal acts of sodomy and masturbation using violence and threat from 2007 and 2012. Now, I'm going to go give you fair warning. This is, I've already read this article. I'm going to share some pieces of it. This is not safe for work. This might trigger some of you. This is your warning that if you have, you know, difficulties hearing about sexual abuse, you might want to pause, you know, or step away for a moment. The former seminary rector, Reverend Enrico Radice, said, is charged with having helped Martinelli avoid investigators by telling the bishop that the victim's allegations were baseless. And this is what they always do, not just the Vatican, but I've covered stories about the Southern Baptist Church, about the Jehovah's Witnesses in Australia and Pennsylvania. You know, it thrives in religion. And I'm not here to attack any particular religion. I'm just saying facts are facts. This sort of stuff thrives in different religions. And what it comes down to is positions of power. When adults are placed in positions where there is a lot of assumed trust, and the child is put in a position where he is afraid to speak out. And then things like this happen where they shame or threaten the kid and say, nobody's going to believe you. I'm the local youth pastor. I'm the, you know, the loved Vatican priest, you know, or whatever it may be. But they abuse children even worse. They traumatize them by threatening them and basically saying that, you know, they have there's no truth, and make them look crazy. Both men appeared in the courtroom on Wednesday wearing masks as part of the Vatican's anti-coronavirus restrictions and huddled with their lawyers after an 8-minute hearing. Neither has responded publicly to the accusations. The next hearing is scheduled for October 27th, where the defendants are expected to take the stand. And I expect we will get some interesting information about that. The charges suggest that Radice's alleged cover-up went beyond what was previously known and put into question Martinelli's very ordination. Prosecutors said Wednesday that Radice not only helped Martinelli evade investigators in the years prior to becoming a priest, but also falsified a letter from the Como bishop announcing his imminent ordination. So they're just making shit up to make these kids look crazy, try to cover up for it. And then, now this is the interesting part. It says that these stories greatly undermine Pope Francis's pledges of zero tolerance for abuse, because these crimes occurred in his own backyard and have gone unpunished for years. Eventually, though, Francis waived the statute of limitations in the case and signed off on a new policy for Vatican City requiring such crimes to be reported to prosecutors. So let's give him due. He said that they're going to waive the statute of limitations so that these guys can actually be charged or at least investigated. But that's the whole thing. If you understand the power centers that many of us conspiracy researchers know, that you have New York City, the Wall Street bankers, you also got London, the inner city of London is another powerful economic center. Then you've got Vatican City, which is another religious center. And there are other power centers like this around the world where the predator class live and thrive and manipulate the people from, because the Vatican definitely is playing a role in all this. And it says the key whistleblower, Camille Jarzombowski, said he wrote Francis and other church authorities several letters over the years detailing what he had seen as the roommate of the alleged victim. This is, again, warning for what we're about to hear. He reported seeing his roommate repeatedly molested by Martinelli at night when Martinelli would enter his dorm room. He said that the molestation began when they were both minors and continued after Martinelli turned 18. Quote, it was terrifying seeing these things because at the time I was 15, I had never even seen two people having sex. And yet I was forced to watch these things inside the Vatican, Jarzombowski said on Wednesday. And the Polish-born man said that he was once a devout altar boy. He was kicked out after he reported the misconduct. So after he tried to go to the authorities in this little Vatican world and report on them, he was kicked out. And he said he's since lost faith entirely in the church and God. Quote, psychologically, it was pretty tough to take because I came to the Vatican to serve the church. I was a believer. And yet at night, I was forced to look at these scenes with the blackmail that if I talked, I would suffer consequences. And there's more to this story, guys. I recommend looking more into that. Again, if you visit theconsciousresistance.com and you look up the latest post about this episode, TCR Live 113, you will find all the links to everything we're covering. All right. Looks like we got some people on float. Shandu73, awesome. Shandu73, email me at intothelight@protonmail.com and I will get you your shirt. I know some of you guys left Facebook. I don't know if you went to DLive. It looks like I only see one person on float. How many of you joined DLive? Somebody says, yes, you do need a DLive account to join. Okay, cool. Well, thank you guys for letting everybody know. But whoever wants a t-shirt, email me at intothelight@protonmail.com and I'll get it to you guys. And I will definitely do that. I'm happy to do that, especially because we got all kinds of new shirts that are available. And that's just another way to support our work. You can get the shirts that say, "You are powerful, you are beautiful, you are free." We're also about to get those in Spanish. You can get the Conscious Resistance logo shirt. You can get the one that says, "Revolution without healing is a recipe for disaster." And I'm working on some new ideas. So appreciate that, guys. Now let's get into one of the key stories that I want to break down. You guys, it's not the most important thing I'd say that's happening in the world at the moment, right? But it's very important because it is a continuation of a trend that started after 9/11. This idea that we should just trust the FBI whenever they said that this person, that person, this person is a terrorist. When they catch them, when they gather them up and they tell them, "Well, look, we have recordings of them saying this thing and that thing." And then there's this weird thing that happened after 9/11. These stories started to pop up often. It was like all of a sudden the United States government was able to find terrorists everywhere. And some of you might not remember, I was barely out of high school, so I didn't know what was happening until I learned later. But there was all these kidnappings taking place. American citizens with brown skin who may have, you know, ancestors from the Middle East or were suspected for one reason or another were rounded up, were kidnapped, renditioned, not even just people from other countries, but the American people. And there are lawsuits going on about this right now. You might not even know about that. It's not really going to get much coverage in the mainstream. And what we started to see often was that these incidents were in many cases, they were entrapment. The FBI was literally setting people up. The FBI was setting people up and then telling the American people, "Look, we caught a terrorist." They would find some dumb idiot who was on MySpace or social media ranting about, "Oh, I hate the government. And, you know, maybe Al-Qaeda was right," or just people who would say stupid things, right? And then they'd send in some informant to start talking to them, encouraging them, pushing them, and maybe saying, "Hey, look, I found these links. They talk about how to make a bomb." And if the person shows any interest, even just, "Cool, I'll check it out because I'm just genuinely interested about how to make bombs," right? But if they could, if the FBI and the US government could say, "Look, this person has made these statements," and then we have them on recording saying that they might be interested in learning how to make Molotov cocktails, they would arrest people and they would call them terrorists. I saw this happen in Texas itself. I'm from Houston, a couple hours away in Austin. Some of you may know the story of Brandon Darby. He was an activist, an anarchist activist, left-wing activist who was very well known in Austin, Texas years ago. And he ultimately decided to become an informant for the FBI. And what he did was essentially entrap these two younger guys who had come to Austin and connected with him. And then they were going to the 2008 RNC to go protest. And he had sort of encouraged them and would say things like, "Look, if you guys aren't serious about this, y'all need to go home." And would sort of stoke the flames of, maybe we need to be violent, or, you know, maybe we need to learn more about Molotov cocktails, or, you know, this talk stuff is getting cheap. He would just do whatever he could to sort of incite them to take things to the next level. And as soon as these young men showed any interest in this, they were arrested and they were charged and they were condemned as terrorists. And then Brandon Darby came out to the community and was like, "Yeah, I'm an FBI snitch." And now he's like a right-wing hero and he writes for Breitbart.com. It's really crazy. But my point is, these things have been going on for some time. And I want us to look at this FBI incident with the lens of that, understanding that the FBI has done that, and really consider, what information do we have? You know, when this first happened, it was sort of what we were being told is that this group was a bunch of Trump supporters. You know, they were right-wing, white supremacist Trump supporters. Who are the Wolverine Watchmen? Yeah, isn't that interesting? It's like a comic book. It's make-believe come to life. Wolverine, like the X-Men, and Watchmen, like the other comic book. The group is committed to violence against the government and politicians, officials have said. And this was just last week. Authorities unveiled an alleged plot by an armed militia group called the Wolverine Watchmen to kidnap and battle Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who faced heavy criticism from such groups in recent months. And they talk about the six men. I think now at this point, a week later, there's been 14 people charged. So I don't know about what every individual is being accused of, but I do know that there's plenty of reasons to be skeptical. So it says in an arraignment last week, Michigan Assistant Attorney General Gregory Townsend called defendants Joseph Morrison and Pete Musico founding members of the group. He said that Morrison was considered a, quote, commander within the Watchmen, a group he described as committed to violence. So this is the story that's been going on. It's been promoted even as you know, on the right-wing media, the conservatives, saying a well-armed citizenry is the best form of homeland security and can better deter crime, invasion, terrorism, and tyranny. That's what their website says. So then let's look at another view of this. This is from Slate.com, which is, of course, left-leaning. And it tries to make it that this is not just about Donald Trump. This is about American ideology in the face of American insurgency. Again, this talk that not only are white supremacists on the rise, but domestic extremists, people who question the federal government and who don't buy into its authority, or people who question the Federal Reserve, or, you know, just all these kinds of things. This is, as I was saying earlier with the anti-vaxxer thing, they're tying in white supremacists with people who legitimately have issues with the government, people who challenge the government's monopoly on forced violence, people who say, well, I'm not going to abide by laws that are immoral, which I think is every one of our duties to do that. They are using these types of incidents to start maligning individuals who question these systems. Now, let me go to another. This is, again, coming from the right wing, big league politics, not really one of my favorite sources, but let's show you what they have here. FBI uses confidential informant to entrap militia activists for phony siege on Gretchen Whitmer. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that topic, the title there, but what he pointed at is it's true that we know for a fact now that the FBI had at least two informants involved. Two informants were involved in this case. And journalist Michael Tracy, he made a good point. He says, looks like a very elaborate long-term use of numerous FBI informants in that alleged Michigan militia plot. The FBI pulls entrapment schemes constantly with a wide range of targets, from mentally unstable radical Muslim teenagers to purported right-wing militia groups. You may want to familiarize yourself with these tactics. Exactly. These things have been going on for a long time. And if you don't know about it, since 9/11, this has been happening. And it's only now they're instead of focusing on Muslims and going to mosques and trying to find some radical person and entrap them and say, look, we caught a terrorist. We need more money to keep fighting terrorism. Now they're doing it for people who, I'm not saying these guys are totally innocent. I don't know them as individuals. I don't know what they've claimed, but I'm telling you that we need to be skeptical because of the presence of the FBI. Also, the Detroit News noted that, quote, those present included an FBI confidential source who recorded the meetings, and the source had been paid about $9,000. And, you know, it goes on from there. So that's a piece of the puzzle. And then we got this from Detroit Free Press. Now that they're actually going to court, this was more recent here. The defense of the individuals says that the plot was just big talk between crackpots. Now, of course, it's his job to defend the people that he's defending, right? So he's going to say whatever he has to say. But when you get into the details, it makes a lot of sense to me, knowing what we know about the FBI's previous actions. According to the defense attorney, he says there was no real plan to kidnap the governor, but only military wannabes who engaged in big talk, the defense lawyers argued in federal court on Tuesday. As one defense lawyer suggested, the case appears to be one of big talk between crackpots, people who talk a lot but are never going to do anything. And he says, quote, have you ever dealt with big talkers? There's kind of a military wannabe theme that runs between the militias. And he was Graham was grilling the FBI agent, Special Agent Richard Trask, about his testimony that at least 13 self-described militia members plotted to kidnap Whitmer from her vacation home and to either take her on the boat in the middle of the lake and leave her there, or to take her somewhere and try to try her for treason. The lawyer asked the agent Trask how the suspects planned to get her to Wisconsin. The agent had no specific answer, saying that there were audio recordings of the suspects discussing a plan to take it to another state. Graham then asked the agent what the suspects planned to do with Whitmer after they left her in the lake. The agent said he had no specific answer beyond testifying that the accused ringleader, Adam Fox, wanted to, quote, take her out on a boat and leave her in the middle of Lake Michigan. Graham is representing Caleb Franks, and who is one of the three defendants who were denied bond on Tuesday after the prosecutor to convince the judge that they were a danger to society. Several other men have been also denied bond hearings, and there was a hearing today, actually, for one of them to see if he was going to get bond. I don't think he made it. And all five defendants appeared in the U.S. court in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where the government disclosed the allegation that apparently Fox wanted to take Whitmer out on a boat and leave her in Lake Michigan. The group talked about kidnapping her, and it goes on. However, the defense lawyers, meanwhile, argued that the government has only produced snippets of conversations in the case and that there is no evidence that the accused had any real plan to kidnap Whitmer. They said that it remains to be seen what role the undercover informants and FBI agents played in the case and whether they pushed the others into carrying out the plan, which in the end was foiled when FBI agents arrested five men on October 7th. So that's what I'm saying, is that they have done these things before. And we don't just, you know, whether you're left wing, right wing, or whatever, don't just rush to judgment. Assume that you know what's going on. I know there's probably a lot of people that were like, oh my God, look, this is more evidence that the crazy white right wing people are just going to, you know, start a race war, that they're coming for whatever. Like, these people, they were, some of them were anti-cop. They didn't like Trump. You know, that's cool. They're not Trumpers per se. But the point is, this story will probably get forgotten, including by myself, in a couple of months. And these men will likely be sentenced as terrorists and do time in prison, even if they were not going to do anything. Even if the person who instigated the whole talk was the FBI informant, one of the agents, or somebody who had been paid to be there. You have to think about that. And again, this is nothing new, guys. Back in the day, for a brief period of time, I used to write for Occupy.com, and I wrote a two-part series called The Recent Crimes of the FBI. And this was in June 2014. So, you know, 6 years ago, I was writing about this and telling people the same thing was going on. And here we go. Recent crimes of the FBI. Is the agency America's greatest threat to domestic freedoms? And I go in here talking about a number of different things, counterintelligence, how they're spying people, and then again, holding the FBI accountable for entrapment. And I talked about the Brandon Darby case right here, like I just outlined. I also talked about a few other cases that have come on, the Cleveland Five. Again, this has been happening for some time now. This is not anything new. And even as far back as maybe 5-6 years ago, you had the New York Times was even reporting on this and calling the FBI out. I doubt they're doing that now. And this is my second part of the article, Who's Watching the Watchers? And basically just showing how the FBI, working with Special Operations Command, is totally just getting away with setting people up for terrorist plots, basically. And that's, I mean, it's happening. And look, here's one of the old articles. This is from the New York Times opinion piece in 2012, terrorist plots hatched by the FBI. And then there was also another Rolling Stone article, but it looks like that one's gone. My point is that these things have been happening for some time. All these links are available at theconsciousresistance.com if you want to learn more about this. But I'm going to pause for a moment before we get to our final story, which is QAnon and Donald Trump. And let's just go over some comments. If there's any comments, I would love to hear from you guys. I see awesome people have joined on Float. Look, every one of you who joined Float, make sure you send me an email at intothelight@protonmail.com along with your username. The first 5 people who do that, I will send you a t-shirt. Hey, Jennifer Morrison, thanks for joining Float. I know you from Envision Festival. Awesome. And we got several people. What's up, Bible Anarchist? Good to see you. Other people as well. And then we got some folks over on DLive. This is awesome. Thank you guys for making the switch over and checking out some of my work on there. Because like I said at the beginning of the show, we're currently banned for another few days or a week or so on YouTube. But I've continued to put out content. I'm putting out audio versions on Pinecast and on Spotify. I'm putting out my videos on Library and on BitChute and on Minds and on Float and on Facebook and on Hive. My work is widely available. Please don't stop following me just because they banned me on YouTube or Facebook. This information is too important. And if you don't follow me, follow somebody else. Just please keep getting the information out. And even if you don't follow me, join my text list. You can read the articles in your own time and get the information out because it's extremely important. I make the effort because I hope and I pray that somebody will make an effort to share it and talk to their friends and family. In fact, on that note, before we move on to the last story, one of the videos I'll be putting out next week is about this template that I'm working on. It's going to be a brief template, a written template, and a video kind of for you to look at and work with on how to speak to your friends and family. Friends, brothers, sisters, we are being told that a second wave of COVID is on the rise and is happening, and that, you know, lockdowns are already taking place in France, Spain, you know, Australia, parts of the UK. It's happening. It's coming back again, so they're telling us, even though that doesn't seem to be what the reality reflects. It's probably going to happen in the United States the colder it gets. You need to be prepared for this. They are prepping for a dark winter, a second wave, and at the same time, there's a lot of election chaos. If you are concerned, even if you're like, not, you don't want to run to Mexico and come visit and be down here part of the Operation Underground Railroad, even if you're going to stay put and hold down the fort, please get some extra food, get some extra batteries, get some supplies, and talk to the people that you love and care about and encourage them to do the same. You don't need to get lost into the rabbit hole and try to convince them of your favorite conspiracy theory. Just tell them, look them in the eyes, put your hand on their chest and say, I love you. I care about you. Can you please just listen to me while I share something that's important to me? It really would be great if you would just listen with an open heart and open mind. And you don't have to agree. That's fine. But I need to tell you this. This is what I'm asking you guys to do. And I will be putting some more information about that later as well. And somebody says, Is it too late to get info about exiting? No, if you want to do that, the email is OPURR, Operation Underground Railroad, at protonmail.com. I will be heading to Houston next week, and I don't want to say too many of the details on here, but I'll be heading to Houston next week, and then we'll be meeting up with people in Houston, if you can make it to Houston, and then heading back to Mexico, and people from there can go about their own way, or if they want to come visit where I'm at, they can do that, and we'll help people get set up in their own place until they feel like going back to the U.S. So all that is important, and I hope you guys will do that. Make an effort to speak to the people you care about and the people you love. Now let's get into the final story of the evening, if we can do that. It is about QAnon and Donald Trump. And it's just one more effort I have to make, although I know I'm beating my head against the wall for most of you, to show you that Donald Trump is not the hero that many of you think he is. And I know that I have friends that I respect and love and care about that I definitely disagree with on this topic. But I encourage you to please listen to what I have to present to you, as well as to go to theconsciousresistance.com and watch my previous work on this and listen to the ways that I've exposed Donald Trump. Briefly, Trump was bailed out by a Rothschild banker. Trump has big oil, big pharma, Bilderbergers, all in his cabinet, Goldman Sachs bankers. He's funded by Sheldon Adelson, who's a huge Zionist from Las Vegas billionaire. I could go on and on and on. And some of you aren't going to be convinced. Some of you are still going to say, yeah, I know, but I'm going to vote for him over Biden. And I'm not even going to go down that road. But I want you to see this. This is about QAnon. And to the QAnon people who really buy into this stuff, Trump was asked directly to his face, as you're going to see, if he would. First, they attacked him and say, please denounce white supremacy. So he denounces white supremacy. Then they ask, this lady asks him to denounce QAnon. This was last night during his little town hall. And so he is asked directly, guys, if you believe that he is the head of your QAnon cult, this was his moment. He's live on the American TV with probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people watching and, you know, hundreds of thousands streaming it afterwards. And they directly asked him at QAnon. Not only they asked him specifically, are the Democrats part of a satanic pedophile cult, which to me is just like, holy shit, I can't even believe this is being asked on national TV. But instead of just being open and blunt and saying, you know what, there is a pedophile cult. But it's not just the Democrats, it's Republicans, and it's not just, instead of just waking people the fuck up, as you're going to see, he cowers. He doesn't say anything. And some of you are going to say, well, it's strategy, you know, he's 4D chess, blah, blah, whatever. The point is, this guy keeps failing you. When he could step up to the plate and say and show who he really is and, you know, say he's going to support QAnon and whatever, blah, blah, he doesn't do it. So I'm going to shut up for a minute. You guys watch this video and let me know right away if you can't hear it and I'll restart it.
It is this theory that Democrats are a satanic pedophile ring and that you are the savior of that. Now, can you just once and for all state that that is completely not true and that disavow QAnon in its entirety?
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that. I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard, but I know nothing about
it. They believe it is a satanic cult run by the deep state.
Study the subject. I'll tell you what I do know about. I know about Antifa, and I know about the radical left, and I know how violent they are and how vicious they are, and I know how they're burning down cities run by Democrats, not run by Republicans.
Republican Senator Ben Sasse said, quote, QAnon is nuts.
You see how Trump always takes an opportunity to make it back into the left-right paradigm, right? Instead of, you know, they're asking him to denounce QAnon or whatever, but instead he's just like, no, let's turn it into Antifa. That's the fake left-right divide, guy. Oh, support the nationalists and QAnon and this and that or whatever, or support Antifa and the radical left. That's a false dichotomy. You don't have to support either. But that's what Trump's role is to do, is to keep you in the left-right paradigm. And that's what QAnon does. Keep listening.
And real leaders call conspiracy theories.
He may be right. I just don't know about QAnon.
You do know.
I don't know. No, I don't know. I don't know.
Let me ask you another thing.
Let's waste a whole show. You start off with white supremacy. I denounce it. You start off with something else. let's go. Keep asking me these questions.
Okay.
Let me just tell you, what I do hear about it is they are very strongly against pedophilia. And I agree with that. I mean, I do agree with that. And I agree with it.
But there's not a satanic pedophile.
I have no idea. I know nothing about
that. You don't know that? Okay.
No, I don't know
you
that.
You just
neither,
this week.
Do you know that.
Okay. Just this week.
Why are you asking me about Antifa? Why aren't you asking me about the radical left?
Because you're volunteering.
Why aren't you asking Joe Biden questions about why doesn't he condemn Antifa? Why does he say it doesn't exist?
Because you're
Antifa,
here
before me. Antifa, no, excuse, so cute. Antifa exists. They're vicious, they're violent, they kill people, and they're burning down our cities. And they happen to be radical left.
Hey, NBC News viewers, thanks for checking out.
So you guys get the point there. This is what I'm saying is that Trump is, it keeps people in that left-right paradigm. And again, if you want to see that video, go to theconsciousresistance.com and you can see all of our links. He's keeping people in that left-right paradigm. That is the goal of QAnon, and Donald Trump is a part of it. And it is a psyop. I've covered this in past videos. There's been numerous people who have been Q, but it was definitely connected to the Trump campaign and people associated with him that they specifically said that they were trying to excite the base. So every now and then Trump will throw a wink or do something weird to try to confirm a Q drop or whatever, and it keeps them going. But right there on American TV, why didn't he come out boldly and say, yes, the Democrats and whoever are you know, involved. We know that there are real pedophile networks. It's a fact. That's the problem, too, is that QAnon, as I said in a recent video, it poisons the well of good research. I've done the Epstein research years ago, you know, before lots of people were talking about it. I've done the Finders documentary showing that the CIA and the FBI have covered up pedophile networks. There is truth to that. Why doesn't Donald Trump say it if he's a part of some freaking superhero underground network to save the world? It's because he isn't, and it's all bullshit to keep you guys playing along and trust the plan, trust the scam. Now, here's another example of Trump's clearly not on the side of freedom and liberty that a lot of people don't pay attention to anymore. During the Obama years, there was a lot of movement against the drone bombs. And Obama had the nickname Drone King. Not a lot of people know, though, that as soon as Trump came into office, he started increasing the drone bombing. And he actually increased it exponentially. So I'm just not going to read the whole article to you, but I will read you just a little headline that I found earlier. It says this. First, what it shows is that, of course, this did start immediately after 9/11. The first Predator drones, they weren't firing missiles yet, but they were starting to survey people around the world as part of 9/11. And then Obama and the Predator drones and the missiles and killing of American citizens who are accused of terrorism without trial, that came into vogue. And this is from the article. Obama's second turn towards drone war transparency would not come until July 2016. What they're talking about here is that Obama, towards the end of his presidency, he started passing executive orders and issuing different rules, trying to like create some sort of like, hey, we're trying to hold ourselves accountable with this whole drone bombing thing, even though he knew that whoever came in after him doesn't have to pay attention to them. That's the whole thing about executive orders. I will never support executive orders, whether it's from the left, the right, or any president, even if it's for something that I appreciate. Because when you support and you condone and you allow that sort of executive authority, it will be used against you as well. So I don't support any executive authority. And it's also, as we can see here, pretty freaking meaningless, basically. So it says in July 2016, the Obama administration released Executive Order 13732, titled U.S. Policy on Pre- and Post-Strike Measures to Address Civilian Casualties in U.S. Operations Involving the Use of Force. The order requires the administration to investigate and investigate reports of civilian casualties killed by U.S. action, offer condolences and payments to the families of those killed, and publish an annual report on strikes and those killed. So he's basically saying, all right, we're going to contact people, we're going to pay them some money, and we'll issue an annual report. The executive order also required that independent reporting as well as government information be factored into the reviews of whether or not strikes had actually killed civilians, which we know they have during the Obama years and the Trump years. That Obama may have killed Anwar al-Awlaki and his son with a drone bomb, a 16-year-old American citizen from Denver while he was in Yemen. And people are like, well, he shouldn't have been hanging around terrorists. And then Trump killed his sister. As with many policies enacted by executive order under the Obama administration, the rule held the weight of law only for as long as an administration decided it wanted to follow it. Without passing the accountability into law through the legislative branch, the order did nothing to meaningfully constrain the actions of the next president. So think about this. They use executive order so that they don't have to go through the constitutional process of actually getting something passed. They just say, by edict, by fiat, I'm going to do this because I'm president and I'm going to write this executive order. But then at the same time, they know that once they leave office, the other president doesn't have to follow it, you know, if they want to. So even if it was a quote unquote good thing done by executive order, the next president doesn't have to do shit about it. So Obama pretended like he was doing some kind of good things and calling for review of drone strikes. But then Trump came into office and did nothing about it. In fact, he made it less accountable and he's increased drone strikes. And this last part of the article, I want you guys to hear. Drone warfare thrives in the abstract. Missiles crashing into bodies rendered unrecognizable and unknowable into faceless targets with no identity more specific than the enemy. So long as the White House, any White House, a Biden White House, a Trump White House, can sustain the public's mental distance from the tangible human consequences of the drone war, an unaccountable machinery will continue to wage war in relative obscurity forever. And I think that's really important. They sustain the public's mental distance from this human consequence of the drone war. Because how many, there's no anti-war protests anymore. There's no anti-drone war protests anymore. There's no anti-war candidates. You know, Tulsi Gabbard was the closest thing to it. And I guess you could say Joe Jorgensen of the Libertarian Party. But in the mainstream and in the discourse and in activism, nobody even seems to care anymore. And it's very frustrating. So Trump supporters, do you give a shit about human life? Or if it's black or brown or, you know, somebody from another country, you don't care? You know, do you care about the rule of law? Because Obama completely destroyed it with the NDAA 2012 and with his drone bombing and being the drone king. But Trump came along and took Obama's crown and he made himself the drone emperor. One final note on this whole Trump QAnon thing. I will highly recommend going to the Rutherford Institute, rutherford.org, and reading this piece from John Whitehead, the 2020 election bamboozle. We are all victims of the deep state's con game. There is no other way around it. They control all the pieces of this puzzle. And this is why John Trudell, a great native activist, he talked about how we shouldn't operate on the terms of the oppressor. We need to move beyond the terms of the oppressor. We got to stop thinking that voting is the answer, that voting is going to fix things. We have to realize that we have to opt out of their system and create something better in order for it to be really effective. We can't think that we're going to change all this corruption by voting for somebody because they have control of this. And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to, you know, gift them with omnipotence and say that they're all powerful and that they never screw up or that there's no answers for us. I'm just saying, guys, they are planning, these individuals, the predator class, the pyramid of power has been planning generationally. They think long-term. Most of us just think, what are we going to do in the next 5 minutes? And then we get distracted by Facebook and we forget what we were going to do. But these people are thinking long game, long term. It's up to you to be forward thinking, to work in that same way, to think about the 7 generations and beyond if you want to survive what's coming. And I say that with all sincerity. So I really highly recommend reading this article from the Rutherford Institute. I will also include that in the links at theconsciousresistance.com. And that is pretty much what I had for today's show. I want to read some comments and just get these out there. Bible Anarchist over on Float says, we must be acting and actively resisting in the real world. I appreciate that. And he also says, we must be the people we've been waiting for. I agree with it. And, you know, it's interesting. Some people get into the whole religious thing about how Q is definitely a stand down. We're going to take care of it, PSYOP. But also at the same time, it's interesting that some people would say that Christianity is in a way as well, that, you know, waiting for Jesus to come fix things is, or, you know, Muhammad or whoever you want to worship is a trap. I tend to agree. That's just me. That's not an attack on Christians or anybody else, but I don't think that the creator, what I have learned, Lakota we call Wakantanka, is the great mystery, the great spirit, you know, the creator. I don't see it in terms of the Abrahamic religions of some fearful smite you God or sit around and wait for me to come back and save you. That's the messianic tradition that has been around for thousands of years. And I think that's a trap. I know that there is a creator of all this beautiful world and of myself and all the abundance that we have. But I believe the creator put us here to experience life and to rise to the occasion, to be as powerful and beautiful and free as we can be. And that's what I'm choosing to be. I'm not going to wait for QAnon. I'm not going to wait for Christ. I'm not going to wait for anybody. I appreciate some of the teachers and the masters that have come before, the educated, empowered individuals who have tried to share with the world, you know, the truth and how we can evolve and create a better world. But I'm not going to sit down blindly and wait for somebody else to do that for me. And I hope you guys won't either. I really appreciate you guys. Now, so let me answer this question. We got a question over here on DLive before I wrap up. What are you guys doing with your ballots if you're choosing to abstain your vote? Well, I don't even, if you mean like a physical ballot, I don't have a ballot, but I think you're asking like, what are we doing if we're not going to vote? And I want to invite you guys to, let me go ahead and share this. If you're asking, well, Derek, you know, if you don't vote, or, you know, if you got to choose one or the other, because it's going to be Biden or Trump. And I hear you, all those things about Biden or all those things about Trump, but Biden just said he might initiate mandatory vaccines, and I can't do that. So I'm going to make a lesser of two evils argument, and I'm going to vote for Biden. But then you are participating in evil, my friends, and I refuse to do that. So if you want to learn more about what we do rather than voting, I encourage you to go to theconsciousresistance.com, like I'm at right now. Go to our about page and click on this welcome message. And you can come find the foundational essays and information about what the conscious resistance is about. I have, here's some suggested reading. What is the conscious resistance? What is agorism? Vertical and horizontal agorism. Defining holistic activism and anarchism. Let me zoom that in. The intersection of holistic and relational anarchism. Here's why I don't vote. Non-voting as a strategy, not apathy. What is a freedom cell? And what is meditation? And how do I meditate? All of those essays are a key part of my strategy and what we promote here at the Conscious Resistance. So go to the Conscious Resistance, check out our About tab, click on Welcome to TCRN 2.5, and you can find out more. Because what we do with our ballots is we tell the state to shove them up their ass, and we go vote every day by being involved in our communities, by growing our own food, by learning as many skills as possible, by healing our trauma, by learning how to effectively communicate with people in honest, open ways, and at the same time, opting out of taxation, opting out of immoral laws, and finding ways to connect with other human beings in ways that aren't dependent on these systems. So I just want to invite you guys to check out agorism, check out counter-economics, check out our work. And I'm going to leave you guys with something. I'm out of here for now, but I'm going to leave you with something. A short talk from somebody that has hugely inspired me. His name is John Trudell, and he's a native radical activist who was very active in the 60s and 70s. And he passed away in 2014 or 15. And I didn't get to interview him, but he's a very powerful person. I'm going to leave you with his words, guys, because I think that you will resonate with them, and I always resonate with them. So, till next time, I appreciate you. Thank you for all that you do out in the world. Please make an effort to speak to your family and the friends and the people you love. And let's go out and create a better world. Remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.
This is Derek Bros.
Derek Bros.
Derek Bros.
This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance.
I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries, Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important you are. If you're listening to this, you are the resistance.
The great lie is that it is civilization. It's not civilized. It has been literally the most bloodthirsty, brutalizing system ever imposed upon this planet. That is not civilization. That's the great lie, is that it represents civilization. That's the great lie. Or if it does represent civilization, and that's truly what civilization is, then the great lie is that civilization is good for us.
But I think that we really need to put serious thought into understanding that we're dealing with a disease. You know, it's like there's this predator energy on this planet. And this predator energy feeds upon the essence of the spirit. Feeds upon the essence of the human being, the spirit. Now, this predator energy can take fossil fuel and other resources out of the earth, turn it into fuel to run a machine system. But in order for there to be a need for that system, and in order for that system to work, they have to mine our minds to get at the essence of our spirit. The same way the external mining takes place, it pollutes. We see now, people understand how it poisons the environment, the water, the air, pollution. The mining of the essence, the mining of the spirit, mining our minds, the pollution from that is all the neurotic, distorted, insecure behavior patterns that we develop. That's the pollution. In order for this predatory system, this disease, to work, we must not be able to use our minds in a clear, coherent manner. Because if we use our minds in a clear, coherent manner, we will not accept the unacceptable. But it's a disease. It lives and travels through the mind, through the generations.